welcome to the Board of Public Works. It was great yesterday meeting and taking pictures and talking with more than 4,000 people down in Taos and Chrisfield. It was a great annual event, the Taos Crab and Clam Bake at Summers Cove Marina. And I just want to start out by thanking the Chrisfield Chamber of Commerce and Tom Schischler and his team at DNR that run the Summers Cove Marina for their tremendous work in putting on another fantastic event. The heat wasn't quite as oppressive as normal. It's usually over 100, hottest day of the year. Yesterday was a balmy 89.
Disappointed.
Yeah, a little breeze almost. But I'm glad to be back here in the climate-controlled governor's reception room with all of you. At this point, I'll turn it over to any opening remarks. Mr. Comptroller.
Thank you, Governor, and good morning, Madam Treasurer. As you know, just starting off the past 18 years, my office and the Comptroller's office has issued a public list of the businesses and individuals most in arrears on unpaid taxes. The public release of names is a last resort and one not entered into without exhausting all other collection efforts. These top 45 tax scofflaws owe more than $12.7 million combined, monies that are rightfully owed to the state, funding, vital projects from schools to roads that Marylanders rely upon daily, and also this tax money I collected on behalf of the counties and the municipalities. Rest assured that my team is tenacious and will recover what is owed to the state, and the honest, law-abiding citizens of the state of Maryland. I emphasize these 25 businesses and 20 individuals tend to be wealthy, so they have the money. They owe the tax. We've been in touch with them month after month after month after month, and it's essentially, this is the message back to the state. So the great thing about this public shaming is that it works because they don't like their friends and their family at fancy cocktail parties that come up to them and say, hey, I saw you on a tax deadbeat list. So anyway, I'd like to end on that kind of bad note. I'd like to indicate that there's some special guests of mine and, frankly, the treasurer and the governor also are here today. I'm delighted to welcome members of the Mount Hebron High School Economics Challenge team and their coach, Van Prime. These bright young students are fresh off a series of impressive victories that began when they clinched the State of Maryland Economics Challenge Championship. This is hard to believe. The 11th win for Mount Hebron. Congratulations. And they went on to beat out thousands of other competitors across the United States to reach the national finals, where they wasted no time in setting the tone for victory by following the sage guidance of Coach Prime. The team's seniors swept each of the four competitive categories, capturing a second-place finish after an intensive winner-take-all quiz bowl finale. And the sophomore members of the team took third in the nation, which is quite impressive, considering these students have never taken an economics course. This is a stellar feat. I know that I speak for all of us when I say I could not be more proud of their achievements. Governor, I know you and the treasurer share my appreciation for these Maryland kids and their coach. And I wonder if after you or perhaps the treasurer wanted to make a comment, if Coach Prime and six of the eight members who are here, Wyatt Curry, Stephen Jin, Aditya Krishna, Laurie Lee, Lorraine, Samuel Nitkin, and Ryan Jung could come up to the podium after we hear perhaps from you.
Sure. Well, first of all, I just want to join the comptroller in congratulating you on this outstanding achievement. I mean, that's really impressive, 3 years in a row, and I can't believe how smart all these kids are. But we just want to congratulate you, especially, I mean, every one of you, the seniors, your advisor, Van Prime, and, Ryan Jung, who was the top performer among all students in the nation. I mean,
say that again?
He was the top performer among all the students in the nation. So I want to give them all the And so I'd love to have their advisor and the whole team come up here. I know that the comptroller and I have some very special citations to present to the team. I don't know if the treasurer would like to say any more congratulations. Bring them up here for their photo.
Total congratulations. It's really wonderful. It's great to see women representing. No, you need more than one, but one great one.
Yes.
There are a few things more important, and I do have to say that as a longtime student of economics, I'm used to thinking of the great old sages, and it's so good to know that there's so many great young sages. I congratulate you.
Yeah, come on up, guys. Let's get a picture. Before we start the Secretary's agenda, I want to start with the DGS agenda first, because we got a very special guest here with us, Joseph Pietrazzella, otherwise known as Joe P. to everybody. He's simply an amazing and outstanding state employee who has been with the Department of DGS working hard for the citizens of Maryland for 42 years. Currently, Joe is the chief of the Project Cost Center in the Office of Facilities Planning. And I can tell you from everybody we talk to, Joe is the go-to person who has been responsible for managing and controlling some of the largest and most important construction projects that the state has undertaken over the past several decades. Recently, Joe faced a major health challenge, which unfortunately resulted in the loss of a leg. But it didn't stop him one bit. Joe faced his health challenge with the same determination and dedication that he has shown over his four decades of service to the people of Maryland. So just like I did when I was in the hospital, Joe insisted on working, never quit. And he asked for a laptop and a Wi-Fi so he could work from the hospital. And that's just the kind of guy he is. But he continued to contribute to several major state projects while going through a tough battle. And Joe, we're so happy that you were back at work. We're really proud of you. And today we're proud to present you with a Customer Service Hero Award for all of the great work that you do on behalf of the citizens of our state. But even more importantly than the well-deserved recognition that you're going to get today, we also have a very special presentation for you. We know how difficult it can be to get around the halls of the DGS offices in your standard wheelchair. So through the generosity of the Anne Arundel County Food and Resource Bank, we have an electric mobility chair for you that we hope will make getting around your job a little easier so that we can maybe get 42 more years of great time. Another big round of applause. How about another big round of applause? applause for J.J. Fagan and Susan Thomas from the Anne Arundel County Food and Resource Bank for the great work they're doing. Today's agenda with the general services.
Governor, could I just add one thing that actually was a joint suggestion? The governor, since our last meeting, has sworn in a new member of the Maryland House of Delegates. We all noted with sadness the passing of Delegate Ted Sophocles very recently and want to congratulate his successor in office, Delegate Alice Sophocles, whom the governor swore in and who has been a long-term contributing member, significant leading member of her community and the county, and we look forward to working with her.
Yeah, thank you very much. Thank you. So we're the Department of General Services, Secretary Churchill.
Well, good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Ellington Churchill, Secretary for the Department of General Services. Our agenda has 24 items on it today, and we'll be glad to answer any questions you have at this time.
Thank you, Mr. Secretary. I want to start with item 16. I just want to thank Secretary Mark Belton and his team. This is an agreement between the Maryland Park Service and Charles County to manage, operate, and provide funding for revitalizing 49 acres of Chapel Point State Park along the Port Tobacco River. And this agreement and funding program from Program Open Space will allow us to utilize this prime waterfront to give access for Charles County residents and visitors. And Charles County Administrator Michael Malinoff is with us today and would like to address the board on this item. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Thank you for this opportunity. First, I have to thank Deb Hall and Eileen Minnick from my staff who really do the work. I just am up here reading the words they put together.
I'm like that, too. I'm just a figurehead. So.
And Mark, too. Thank you. On behalf of the Charles County Board of Commissioners, I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to share some brief remarks about the Chapel Point lease agreement. Charles County is delighted to partner with Maryland Department of Natural Resources in maintaining one of the finest recreation assets, Chapel Point State Park. This hidden gem offers tremendous opportunities for us to enhance the park's use, whether on foot, bicycle, kayak, or boat. It is adjacent to the existing county park resources in Port Tobacco. We look forward to improving hiking and biking trails that will allow visitors to explore our natural environment. As an avid cyclist, I've already taken advantage of the trails the park has to offer. And with our partnership, I'm confident many others will discover the unique recreational opportunities available at Chapel Point. The leased area will be enhanced to include a boat launch, beach access, and an area for expanded parking and kayak launch. We are enthusiastic about the opportunity to revitalize 50-acre park along Port Tobacco River to offer prime waterfront access to these recreational activities for our residents and visitors. The county also benefited tremendously from the integration of recreation opportunities with tourism by expanding the Heritage Trail with interpretive exhibits, promoting passive and outdoor recreation activities, linking them to the historic Port Tobacco Village and Port Tobacco River Park. We welcome a continued partnership with the Maryland Historic Trust to ensure the preservation of the park's cultural resources and highlighting their significance to our visitors. In closing, I'd like to share that I'm passionate about the work of the visionary landscape architect Frederick Law Olmsted, who is best known for his work in places like Central Park, U.S. Capitol Grounds, and the West Front Terrace at Biltmore Estate Grounds in Asheville.
And Chicago,
and Baltimore, and other places. Newport, Rhode Island, where I used to live. And an effort to create parks as spaces for both active and passive recreation that offer to retreat from the daily pressures of life. This agreement represents our effort to both preserve and expand our county's own Emerald Necklace, and Chapel Point is a crown jewel in the plan to achieve that goal for our community. I'd like to thank you all very much. The Secretary has been a tremendous partner in this. In fact, I think we both shared wandering that park when we first came to the county, each of us at our own time, and shared the same vision. And I think this really puts it together and is a wonderful opportunity.
Well, thank you very much for your work with Charles County. Thank you for partnering with DNR. I think it's a great program. And I don't think there's any conflict of interest, even though Secretary Belton is from Charles County, and he probably wants to utilize the waterfront there.
So it's
a great program, and thank you both. Thank you all and your teams.
This is fantastic, and I was just saying to Suzanne, I want to go there. What are you going to be doing anything to integrate and protect the historic and prehistoric artifact known and unknown, I guess?
Well, I know that we've been working with the Piscataways and the Maryland Historic Trust to do just that. And the interesting thing about the location of the park is if you come onto Chapel Point Road, you start at Port Tobacco, which is a beautiful historic area, and the county's been in the process of restoring that. So that's our goal. We just expanded a park with an interpretive trail leading beyond Port Tobacco, and this will just extend it. And I think you'd be we extend an invitation because St. Ignatius, which is the church right above the park, is one of the, I think, most beautiful places in the state.
We'll be there.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Appreciate it. Thank you.
Are there any other comments or questions on the agenda?
Item 23, please.
Item 23.
Oh, this is, no, forget it. I'm sorry.
Okay. Any other questions on DNR?
EGS.
EGS. It's a DNR project.
You guys, stick around for the next item. It's going to be very educational.
Okay. You might want to disregard anything that happens and put your cover your ears. Is there a motion on the DGS agenda?
Second.
3-0 on DGS. Now, we're going to move back to Secretary.
Good morning, Governor. Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. Always excited about an educational opportunity. We have 23 items. Interestingly, 23 items on the Secretary's agenda with 9 reports of emergency procurement, and we are ready to go.
Well, thank you. I think Comptroller and I both want to talk about the same item. Let me just go first, and then I'll turn it over to him. Item 23,
Yes. Which
really represents a significant update, I believe, to our state procurement regulations. And I want to thank our procurement advisor, Dave Vinal, and I'd like to have him come up and briefly describe the changes, and then I want to thank the chief.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, my name is Gabe Nall. I am the procurement advisor to the board. The item for you today is to propose new regulations and amendments to the state procurement regulations. The vast majority of these items are to implement changes from the 2017 legislative session. Some of those changes include, for one, increasing the small procurement threshold from $25,000 to $50,000. We are also expanding the Small Business Reserve Program. This is a significant change. Currently, or previously, we had a goal of 10% for the Small Business Reserve Program, and only select agencies could be utilized under that program. Now the goal is being raised to 15%, and it's going to apply to all state agencies. We're also going to repeal the preference for competitive sealed bidding. And what this allows procurement officers is more flexibility in choosing the appropriate procurement method for a given procurement. Another change we're doing is we're establishing regulations for master contracting. This is a particular procurement method that involves secondary competition, where we first award to a group of master contractors, and then we issue task order requests as secondary competition to that group of qualified master contractors. Those are some of the more significant changes in this packet of regulation changes.
Mr. Comptroller?
Yes, thank you very much, Gabe. And I compliment the governor for paying attention to procurement. And I wanted the young winners of the economic prize to listen just to this one issue. You can leave after this. But this is critically important to the fiscal health of the state, that we have a honest, accountable, transparent check and balance on how the state actually spends the money, and that it be done in a forum which is open to the citizens, not in some back room or closed door, small environment. These expenditure of taxpayer dollars need to be in a room like this. And the function of the board, in part, is to provide supervision over these actual dollars that are being spent. And we're not talking about a small amount of money. We appropriate, on average, $440 million every 2 weeks in contracts. So what we're doing today with under the governor's leadership is very significant, because this process is subject to, let me just say, in other states, to manipulation and corruption. And this board that sits before you provides sunlight, and the sunlight disinfects the corruption, deterrent. And I hope you guys, well, one of you will probably be comptroller someday. I hope you support the kind of reforms that we're advocating today.
As far as these guys are, they're going to make a lot of money in the private sector.
But I'm going to ask for an amendment in a moment that I think will increase that transparency and public oversight. And, Gabe, you mentioned the proposed expansion of master contract authority to three major departments. And I think it's no secret to anyone who's watched the board proceedings over the years that I've publicly expressed concerns about the use of master contracts in procurement processes. Why is that? The idea that a state has the ability to handpick a group of companies and give that exclusive group of companies, and only that exclusive group of companies, the opportunities to submit bids for certain contracts has always raised a lot of red flags with me. To be even more blunt, this practice has the real potential to undermine what this state has sought to achieve over the years, which is to generate more competition for state contracts. While there are certainly advantages to this practice, and I have to admit my own agency in the past has utilized this from time to time where appropriate, there are real causes for concern to the extent we're expanding them. Chief among them for me is the fact that we have hundreds of millions of dollars in state contracts that do not have to appear before this board. That's because the so-called task orders, in quotation marks, which are really contracts awarded through master contracts, are currently outside the board's authority to review. Since the start of the year alone, the Department of Information Technology, and I'm not questioning their integrity at all, they've awarded 5 task orders, no review by this board. Each one has exceeded $10 million. One of the 5 was a whopping $149.3 million task order contract for the Department of Human Services. Not suggesting there's anything wrong with that particular contract. It needs to be brought before the board. That is critical to, I believe, the fiscal health of the state.
I see today, Governor, a supplemental item has been added to the Department of Information Technology agenda today, adding $25 million, once again, no review by us, to our old friend, that indispensable chestnut, Esri. Those of you that haven't been here for the last 10 years have no idea what I'm talking about, but that's an old football that kicked around a lot. Additionally, it's come to light in recent days that a Russian oligarch bought major stake in a company that stores our sensitive voter registration data and delivers our online election ballots. How was this contract obtained? I'm told it was through a $7.5 million master contract task order that was never brought before the taxpayers. So I think the taxpayers of the state would feel more comfortable knowing that these contracts go through the BPW process. Our process has saved countless tens of millions of taxpayer dollars while providing an open, accountable, transparent forum for the review and approval of state contracts. For the reasons that I've just stated, Governor, I'd like to propose an amendment to the regulations before us concerning master contracts and respectfully urge you and the Treasurer to consider supporting them. So I would move to amend COMAR 21.05.13.06 to read, letter H, secondary competition awards, renewal options, and modifications valued over $200,000 shall be submitted to the Board of Public Works for review and approval before execution on the appropriate action agenda in accordance with COMAR 21.02.01.05. Adding this language will ensure that the expansion of master contracting to additional agencies leaves intact the important oversight performed by this board. And, Governor, thank you for working with us on this.
Comptroller, I just want to make sure, because this is the first time I actually see it in writing. I agree with the concern about master contracts. And I think if there is an award of over $200,000 under a master contract, whether it's a new award or a renewal award or a modification of that site, should come back here. I have no issue with that at all. I just want to make sure that that's, and I'm asking the Secretary, I guess, that that's what it says. The language is secondary competition awards, comma. Renewal options, I guess, of the secondary.
Correct.
And modifications of the secondary value. That's my understanding of the intent.
Yes, I agree with that, and the procurement advisor agrees with that.
I'm happy to support the amendment as well, Mr. Comptroller. So I think it strengthens the fiscal oversight of this board, and it will enhance the transparency and oversight of public dollars that our citizens deserve. So you have a motion on the floor. Is there a second? 3-0. And now I just want to thank Gabe, for your great work on this project, Secretary McDonald, you and your staff, including BPW Counsel David Bohannon, along with Treasurer Kopp and Comptroller Francho and their teams for all of their hard, Suzanne Throgan, and all their hard work which contributed to the production of these new regs. This probably isn't the most glamorous thing. It doesn't get a lot of headlines or accolades, but it's very important to the kind of day-to-day nuts and bolts running of the government, and I think it represents another step forward in our continuing efforts to modernize and streamline state's procurement in order to deliver the best value for the taxpayer. So any other questions?
Since I force these young people to go through this, what you've just witnessed is something that is enormously significant, and I want to applaud Governor Hogan for paying attention to, a subject that, frankly, nobody else pays attention to. A few people, I know the legislature does it, but they're not really, well, put it this way, in the previous 8 years before Governor Hogan, there was not a lot of attention paid to procurement reform, other than something called hot wax or something. I can't even remember what it was.
Hot wash.
I don't even know what hot wash is.
Young fiscal whizzes that are coming up, I think you have a sense of how important it is to have checks and balances, oversight, openness, transparency, You know, just the mere fact that you have to appear in public improves the product that these contracts are delivering. So thank you guys for sticking around.
And we may want some of these brilliant economists to join our procurement task force to give us some good ideas. So thank you so much. Congratulations. I think we can dismiss you now.
Can I just say, for the record, I agree strongly with the comptroller, but would also point out that this was the subject of the legislature in the last session, so that your representatives elected to all of the branches of government recognize in Maryland, much, I think more sensitively than in many states, the importance not only of raising money and budgeting it, but actually on how it's appropriated and expended.
Go up and read the New York, what's going on in the New York Times right now. I mean, it is a full-blown disaster for New York City right now because their whole procurement process has been questioned because of scandals. And the Senate president just got convicted, and the Senate speaker got convicted, and it's a mess. And it's because it's all done in the dark. So this is open somewhat. Kudos to the governor.
One last plug. The Board of Public Works is unique. Maryland's board system is unique among nations, and one of the reasons we get a AAA bond rating, which I know you must be very interested in.
Very good. Well, thank you all so much. Are there any other questions on the Secretary's agenda? Motion?
Yes.
Second. 3-0 on the agenda. Now we're going to move on to the DNR real property agenda.
Morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer, for the record.
Apparently everybody in the room is not interested in your DNR. They're all leaving.
They don't know what they're missing.
Admiral Belton, I don't know what it is. It said to turn them off, but no one's going to be around. Hey, wait till they quiet down a little bit. Let's go ahead.
All right. Thank you, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, I'm Mark Belton, the Secretary of the Maryland Department of Natural Resources, and we have 8 items on our real property agenda for your approval this morning.
Are there any questions on the DNR agenda? Is there a motion? Motion on DNR? Second. 3-0. Next is DBM.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. For the record, Mark Nicole, Deputy Secretary of the Department of Budget Management. The department has submitted 8 items for today's agenda. I have representatives here to answer any questions you may have. Items 1S and 3S have been revised, and item 8S mod is a supplemental item.
Very good. I have no questions. Anybody else questions?
No, DBM? Approval.
Second. 3-0. We're on a roll here. Now we're going to move on to the university system agenda. Anybody from the university system?
You may be coming in. They have, the university system has 3 items on the agenda.
Maybe we'll hold on.
I'm taking questions if there's questions.
We'll hold the system agenda since they're not here. Right. We'll move on to information technology.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, I'm Michael Leahy, Secretary of the Department of Information Technology. Today we started with 9 items on the agenda, one of which is supplemental, item 9, IT. However, we are removing item 1, GM, leaving us with 8 items, and I do have agency representatives to answer any questions.
Great. I see we have a Jorge Tirigal signed up to speak in support of item 8. Is Jorge with us?
He's here.
Good morning.
And a good morning to you, Mr. Hogan. I see that my new friends, Mrs. Cobb and Mr. Franchot, are willing to hear me again. Now, for those of you who don't know me, my name is Jorge Tirigal. I am a close associate of Catherine Scott, the granddaughter of the President of the Maryland Senate, Thomas V. Miller, Jr. And I'm also the descendant of Jose Marzano, who was a close friend of Jose de San Martin, the founding father and liberator of Argentina and Peru. Today, Mr. Hogan, I want to talk to you today about teaching these little juveniles a lesson to become good civilians. I believe that juveniles who commit crimes, let's say, for example, shoplifting, can be considered an easy fix, because we can find a way to teach juveniles to be a good citizen. I believe that the juvenile services program is a great way for juveniles to behave themselves and not to be lawless. And that teaches them the valuable lesson of an honest day's work here. Now, to be fair and very honest, I'm very amused by the detail of the juvenile services program. The same thing with how much you're giving to this program. And I see you're putting it into hard work. You're putting a lot of hard work into the juvenile services program. You would not be laughing if you would ever see a former juvenile doing good to the community. And that, by endorsing the juvenile services program, you're actually helping the community by giving a juvenile another chance. Another chance to become another good civilian. Who knows? Maybe it'll turn out to be a birthday party cutie financer or something. So, if I was you, I would pass the item and just let go of the bad memories, Mr. Hogan. Just move on. Be yourself. That's what every juvenile should be. That's what every juvenile should be, when in fact, he has to move forward and forget that nothing has happened. It could have been worse if the juvenile had been jailed or, you know, had probation. And I bet that this program could save their lives. Jesus Christ. I mean, it could save anyone's life. So, with one last gesture, Mr. Hogan, I'm asking you to pass the item for the community, for the country, and for the state. Thank you.
Thank you, Jorge. Appreciate that. Are there any other questions on the DO-IT agenda?
I have a question. Go ahead. On item 3.
Thank you.
Thank you. Governor, we're being asked today to approve awarding a $7.4 million contract to an affiliate of the Microsoft Corporation based in Reston, Virginia, for a new financial management system for the Department of Human Services. This is a 3-year contract with 2 1-year renewal options. I have a quick question. I see that 2 Maryland-based firms also submitted bids for this contract. The second technically ranked bidder was Creole Consulting from Bethesda, Maryland. I see that their bid was actually $634,000 lower than the proposed awardee. Since Creole was ranked second, that means that they would have been able to perform the requirements of the RFP. Can I get an explanation as to why the department went with Microsoft instead of the lower-priced bidder?
Certainly. For the record, my name is Greg James. I'm Deputy Secretary for Operations at the Department of Human Services. And I'm joined here today by my CFO and my Stafford Chipungu and our Director of Procurement, Sandy Johnson, as well as our Chief Information Officer, Kenyatta Powers, excuse me. And I'd like to ask Ms. Johnson to address the procurement issue.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Governor, Madam Treasurer, and Mr. Comptroller. My name is Sandy Johnson. I'm the Director of Procurement for the Department of Human Services. When we did the oral presentations for these services, and Creole presented its oral presentation, the requirements that we asked for in the RFP that they responded that they could do, when they gave their presentation, some of the reporting requirements that we asked for, they told us, yes, we said yes, but we'd have to build those reports. And it would take them, in some cases, 4 hours or longer to build the reports. And when we looked at that, and because it wasn't in their pricing, we determined that that would actually probably end up costing us more for some of the services that they said that they could provide, those requirements that they couldn't actually do or would have to build.
Who's the incumbent?
There's no incumbent. This is the first. This is the first procurement for these.
So they didn't respond to the RFP accurately?
Correct.
And there was something in the RFP about the including the reporting?
Yes, there were. There were several requirements. We had about 45 requirements, different requirements.
And they said they were going to have to charge you more money?
They didn't say that. They said that if they did, they'd have to take it back and redo that portion of the proposal that they had submitted. Because, again, when we did the oral presentations, they actually had to come in and actually give us a presentation of the services that they were going to provide, of the actual system.
Okay.
And that system didn't have that information in it.
Thank you. Thank you, Governor.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Any other questions on the dual agenda?
I have a really brief question on 5 that I will then follow up. But it's the Department of Health clinical and financial data repository. And my general question, I think actually, I don't know if it's of the Health Department or of Secretary Lane, but when we have things like this, large procurements like this, Mike,
yes.
How and when do you work in the security aspect?
Well, it is worked in when we actually have looked at what the system is to procure. So do it at that point. Looks at whether it is going to be based in our servers or in the cloud and applies our security. And if there are specific security patches that are necessary because the vendor doesn't utilize them, we incorporate them into what we're building into the system. So we take responsibility as to it.
It's not part of the RFP. It's something that's applied.
It is typically not. That is correct. Yes.
Okay. Thank you. Thank you.
Is there a motion on the DO-IT agenda?
Move approval.
Second. 3-0. Now I see the university system has joined us. We're going to go back and jump back to the university system agenda. Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor. Joe Evans, representing the University System of Maryland. We have 3 items on the agenda. Here to answer any questions.
Any questions on the university system?
No.
Motion.
Approval.
3-0.
Thank you.
Good work. Now let's move to the Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Madam Treasurer, Governor Hogan, Comptroller Francho. For the record, my name is R. Earl Lewis, Jr., Deputy Secretary of the Maryland Department of Transportation. We have 20 items for your consideration today.
Now, I'd like to maybe have Administrator Smith from the airport come up to describe item 19 for us, and then I know that we have a number of folks signed up to speak on this item. Good morning.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. I'm Ricky Smith, Executive Director of the Maryland Aviation Administration, and I'm looking forward to presenting this item to you. But first, I want to provide some background, if I can, on the project. So back in 2004, we opened what we call the Southwest Airlines Terminal, but it's officially named the Concourses A, Concourse B Terminal. And we opened that in 2004 based on an environmental assessment that was done in 2000. That environmental assessment that was done in 2000 we got a FONSI and a record of decision from the FAA based on forecasted operations at that time. Aircraft operations, not passenger levels, but forecast aircraft operations and type of aircraft. In 2000, so that approved 31 gates for that terminal. In 2004, when we opened the terminal, we only needed 24 of those gates. So 6 of the gates remained undeveloped, although the infrastructure for those gates was in place. So in 2017, Southwest Airlines began to express a need to have a terminal renovation to address concerns in the airport. So let me talk about that a little bit. So our terminal A gate, which was built in 2004, today it's failing. Okay, if you go into the terminal at any time of the day for the most part, the restrooms are overcrowded. People are walking over each other in the food court because there's no room to sit. People buy food. There's no space in the waiting areas for them to sit. Hold rooms or the areas where you sit before you board an aircraft are grossly overcrowded. And the baggage handling system has all but failed. As a matter of fact, I had a conversation with a gentleman yesterday who told me that he waited 3 hours for his bags. So our baggage handling system has failed. And Southwest Airlines has expressed real concern about their ability to maintain existing operations without some improvements to the terminal. And so the project before you is an expedited project to add 5 additional gates onto Concourse A. Now, these 5 additional gates, this is an enabling project. This is a project that will allow us to move Southwest Airlines traffic from an A-B terminal project to the 5 additional gates while we do the construction of the new baggage handling system. It does not result in additional capacity. It does not result in additional growth or operations. It's simply designed to maintain their existing operations. Okay. So the project that this is enabling is a renovation of the Terminal AB project, which addresses all the issues that I just raised, the customer service issues that I raised. Southwest has made it clear that they need to be able to operate in the renovated facility by 2022. In order for us to meet that schedule, we have to begin work on this enabling project, the 5-gate extension, by January of next year, January of 2019. In order to meet that schedule, we're asking for an expedited procurement, which will save us approximately 2 months in the procurement schedule so that we can have a contractor on board to start construction in January of 2019. A companion issue with this is Southwest Airlines acquired AirTran in 2011. They acquired operations on Concourse C. So they have 7 gates on Concourse C. When this AB project is completed, Southwest Airlines will consolidate its Concourse C operations onto the AB concourse, thereby freeing up gates on Concourse C. This project will not result in any additional gates with respect to the 5-gate expansion or the improvements to the Southwest terminal. With respect to the EA process, so as I mentioned earlier, in 2000 we did an environmental assessment to enable us to complete the Southwest Airlines terminal, and that was a full-blown environmental assessment process. It had public input, public comment.
I'm sorry, did you say there would be no net expansion, period, or for Southwest?
So when we complete the AB terminal.
Right.
Okay.
And C moves to AB. Okay.
So we're going to add 5 gates on A. We're going to take away 5 gates on the AB connector temporarily. They will come back. And so there will be 5 additional gates, net gates, on the AB terminal. Southwest Airlines also has 7 gates on C.
Right.
They will transfer those operations onto B.
Right.
Right? So we're losing, Southwest will lose those gates.
So essentially
onto C.
Net for Southwest, but it's plus 5
it's for not
BWI.
It's not a net for Southwest. Because right. Southwest will give up the 5 to 7 gates that they have on C.
Right.
Okay, so right now Southwest Airlines has 38 gates. Right, they will have 38 gates when this is all done. They're giving up 7 of those, 5 to 7 of those gates when they consolidate onto AB. Those 5 gates left vacant on C, right, those 5 gates will be made available for whatever airline wants service, but not for Southwest.
It's net to Southwest, but it's 5 more gates to BWI.
It is not net for Southwest. Southwest will maintain their existing gate level. It's a net for the airport. Right.
No new and no less
correct.
Number.
That's correct.
Sorry.
That's correct. So the EA that was done in 2000, again, was done with all the public input. That was done back in 2000. In 2017, to accommodate the project I just talked about, we went back to the FAA and asked what would be necessary in order to satisfy the environmental compliance requirements to move with the AB project. And they determined that a reevaluation of the 2000 EA would be appropriate. And so they did the evaluation, and what they determined is that the forecasted operations based on the project that will, based on the new project, that the operations will not increase. As a matter of fact, as an aside, over the last 5 years, our operations have decreased by 2%. Operations are decreasing, not increasing. Airlines are increasing the size of their aircraft, and so passenger levels are growing, but operations are decreasing. And you know, that's typically what drives additional noise. Okay. Just one more note on the noise issue. So we've done a number of airport development projects in the last few years, and one could argue that some of those projects may lead to growth more so than the project that's on the agenda today. The only difference is the FAA made a decision to shift the flight paths. Operations haven't increased. The airport isn't producing more noise. The noise has just shifted to a new community that did not experience noise today. Anne Arundel County, for example, who's well represented on the roundtable, they're always concerned about noise, but they're not as outraged as we are experiencing with some of our friends in Ellicott City, in Howard County. I'm a Howard County resident, by the way. And that is because they are experiencing new noise because the flight paths are shifted, not because operations have increased. And again, the project that we're proposing to you will not result in an increase in operations. Therefore, it will not result in additional noise. And that's why we feel comfortable making that recommendation to the Board of Public Works. The schedule is important because, the terminal is failing from a customer service standpoint. It is very difficult for Southwest to meet its current operational needs. But even as they bring on, as they increase the size of their aircraft, which is bringing more passengers into the terminal, it's putting more stress on a facility that's already failing. And again, the baggage handling system, it's a travesty. It's probably one of the worst in the country, and it shouldn't be that way. We can do better than that. And this project is an enabling project to address the baggage handling system project. So obviously I ask for the board's consideration. I know that we have some members of our community that are concerned about the potential noise impact, but this project that's proposed to the board will not drive additional noise and will not drive additional operations.
Thank you very much. Mr. Smith, thank you for that testimony. But what is it that will take, will it take to get the FAA to comply with the state's environmental noise abatement laws and look at the situation that they have created? Are they responding to your requests? Or I applaud the governor for sending an administrative petition to the FAA, but apparently they've told us to go jump in the lake and they've abandoned the process.
It's a little more complicated than that. I have personally met with Director Huerta of the FAA, with Secretary Chow at the Department of Transportation. We filed suit against the FAA to try to stop this from happening and to revert back to the pre-next gen when they changed all these flight patterns. We would have had a really good case. However, the previous administration agreed to these changes and signed off on them. And the Secretary of Transportation, Mr. Smith, has agreed to that. So we're coming back in with a new administration saying, this is uncalled for. How did this happen? We don't want this to happen. It's caused all these noise complaints. They go, here's the document where the state of Maryland agreed to it. So we have filed suit. We directed the Attorney General to sue them. We've been pushing at every direction and every single point. We've met with citizens. There's nobody pushing harder to try to change this back to the way it is. It's disgraceful. and should have never happened. And we're going to continue to do everything that we can do to change it back. That has nothing to do whatsoever with this baggage claim, the area that we're trying to upgrade so that we don't lose Southwest and we can continue to provide better service to our customers.
The governor is absolutely right. I mean, I'm talking to airport directors all over the country. And I can't meet one of them without them asking about what's going on in Maryland. I mean, the governor has led a very aggressive effort to try and change the FAA's handling of the situation. And
what do you predict is going to be the upshot of all that? I mean, I appreciate it.
Attorney General thinks we have a pretty good case.
Okay. And how long is that going to take? I don't know. Is there anyone here that can tell me what?
Probably not.
I can't tell you when I think the FAA will react. I wish I had that answer.
Why don't we go ahead and let some of the other folks testify, and then we can get any questions. Some of this is going to be addressed back and forth with the concerns. And so we have three people who have signed up to speak in opposition to the item, and I'd like to get their comments and then maybe have the executive director respond, and then we'll have other people who are speaking in favor of it, and they can talk about that. But first, I think signed up is Mary Reese from the BWI Roundtable. Ms. Reese, good morning.
Okay, my testimony is in opposition to the proposed expedited procurement for terminal expansion at BWI. I currently serve as chairperson of the DC Metroplex BWI Community Roundtable. We are a group of legislatively appointed representatives for all districts in the state that are currently negatively impacted by the FAA's implementation of NextGen at BWI. For over a year, we have worked with the FAA, with the assistance of the MAA, and with the bipartisan support of our elected representatives and Governor Hogan to resolve the NextGen crisis. Tens of thousands of Marylanders are experiencing physical harm, loss of enjoyment of their homes, and serious property devaluation under the low and concentrated flight paths that NextGen created. I personally live over 17 miles from BWI in Anne Arundel County in Annapolis, and an MAA sound survey completed on my property revealed 85 decibel flights over my home. As chair, I have heard from realtors who have buyers walking away from homes in prime real estate areas. And I have heard testimony from physicians who cite published studies linking aviation noise to serious health problems, including increased blood pressure, chronic sleep deprivation, and worse. And I hear testimony from residents suffering from those problems since NextGen was implemented here. And to date, we have no solution in sight. On June 26th, the state filed an administrative petition against the FAA, and subsequently the FAA withdrew from all NextGen-related talks with our roundtable and the MAA. It is worth noting that even before the petition was filed, the FAA's willingness to work with our roundtable was ominously inefficient and evasive. This past Tuesday, July 17th, the MAA's Director of Planning, Kevin Clark, confirmed to our roundtable that this expedited procurement is an expansion that will result in a net gain of 5 gates within 4 to 5 years. Mr. Clark explained that this proposal is a part of a decision to expand BWI operations that was made 2 to 2.5 years ago. That's significant. That's the same time that the FAA implemented NextGen at BWI. BWI CEO Ricky Smith confirmed to WJZ News that the purpose of the construction is expansion. He said, quote, "It's just all aimed at adding capacity so that our airlines can grow and offer more service to our public so that they can get wherever they want to go nonstop and conveniently." The FAA has created an aviation noise crisis in our state, and now that the FAA has ceased to communicate with the state and our roundtable, they may continue to implement tweaks and changes to the NextGen system here without any advanced notice. In fact, at our last meeting with the FAA in April, they revealed they had plans to add even more concentrated flight paths over more unsuspecting Maryland residents. With so many unknown factors and the FAA refusing to work to resolve the problems we now face, we have been told by the Attorney General that a lawsuit, there's a very high bar for the state of Maryland to sue at this point, and it doesn't look like we have grounds to do so. Measures simply must be taken to not cause additional harm to Maryland residents. So we ask that this request for expansion be set aside until we have a solution to the aviation noise crisis at BWI.
Can I ask a question?
Yes, sir.
Thank you for your testimony. Is it that the planes are lower in addition to changing the pattern?
Correct. So they are lower and concentrated. So for the people who live under these paths, it can be nonstop every 30-second intervals. They come over the city of Annapolis. People who are well outside of any noise abatement zones are receiving, like I said, 85 noise decibel rating. It's ruined our property value.
Yeah, so the old patterns, people bought houses knowing that there was noise, and they got a great deal on their house because they were willing to put up with the noise. Now they have nice quiet. They moved them over on top of people who paid a lot of money for their house that didn't have any noise and now do.
Yeah, what I'm trying to figure out is why the previous administration signed off.
That's a great question, but that's the biggest problem we have in this lawsuit is that there's actually a document signed by the O'Malley administration agreeing to the FAA.
And I hope that I didn't vote for it.
Well, to be honest with you, this has
been... I think it was just the Department of Transportation.
Next Gen would have been in the works for 20 to 30 years. So this is a long process. And the MAA recommended to the administration to move forward with it. So... I wouldn't blame it on administration.
I can understand the need to have people moving.
Well, we actually have a really good case over there.
Air travel.
And nobody can agree to that. So
having them come in low and more frequently,
the state didn't sign off.
I don't really understand the aviation reason for that, but my concern is that the FAA is just... as you say, it's a pretty slim hope that they're going to make any adjustments, despite the meetings, et cetera. I hope they do. I applaud the governor for doing that, but what a mess.
Right. Well, gentlemen, we own the airspace, and we're the taxpayers, and they work for us. So I do believe we will hold them accountable.
But thank you very much.
You're welcome.
Next, we have Paul Davidson. Is Paul Davidson here?
Yeah, he said that he was not.
Okay, we have Laura Donovan.
Correct.
Good morning. Thank you for letting me speak today. You all are pretty well up to date on what's going on. I don't have to say very much at all. A couple of the biggest things that worry me is during the course of the roundtable meetings, I had come up with, this is observations on FAA's efforts to implement reforms and modernize the national airspace. This is an inspector general report about the FAA. This is the part that got me. Addressing community concerns and implementing controller tools for PDN. It has been delayed due to community concerns over aircraft noise. While regulations did not require FAA to fully assess the impact of aircraft noise. That's the part. Now, in these meetings, one FAA person, Rob Ellens, had stated three times that they were not regulated to do this, to look at the people on the ground. They are all about the air. They're all about air safety, passenger safety, getting it out on time, money, et cetera. And kudos. They, for the most part, I haven't had anything run into my house yet. Very happy about that. But we are not considered on the ground. Even now, I don't know how true this is because these days there's 100 stories floating around about everything. I saw somewhere that 60% of the 60% of the cost of the gates is coming from the transportation fund. I, for one, drive over a lot of bumpy roads, and I'm really maxed out on noise where I'm at. I lose sleep. I can't function. There's a lot of days I do not drive because I'm afraid I'm going to hit someone because I'm not conscious. And I can go on and on. There's all kinds of horror stories. So that's the one thing. FAA is not looking out for us. Another thing with the... I'm incredibly uneducated about these things. But with these NEPAs, they're really strange. This is from Wikipedia, and I almost hate to read it because I'm not a big fan of the Internet, and I wish I could have brought a study or something that did better. But they talk about how that studies have been done after NEPAs have been done, and the two did not coincide. Let me see if I can find this real quick. Talking about uncertainty at all stages. Environmental assessments fail to predict accurately the impacts observed. Have reported evidence of the intrinsic uncertainty attached to EIA predictions from a number of cases worldwide. I can provide this later, but you get my point here. The flight path changes are bad. I'm close to the airport. I do not now, which I did have, a flight path right over my house. Now I have helicopters over my house. And I think, and I'm not sure, and I'm trying to find out, I think they were going down 295 and 95, and now they're going over my house. This is so bad. It feel, you can stand in my living room and feel like you're being punched in the chest. I think they call it rotor wash. And the airport has made numerous attempts. Here's where you all don't have much to do with this. The helicopters are barely regulated. They will tell you, yes, they're regulated, but when I tried to file a report before, I got a page back with one sentence that says, you do not have a complaint. And then I called, and they said, well, you know, because of the nature of them, they can go higher, they can lower. These helicopters are like flying houses. These things are huge. I've been there since 1970. These things are mega, and they shake, and it's bad. I get umpteen military helicopters. I had a Red Cross military helicopter over my... I got my ear... I don't know what to call it. It feels like a snap. It's painful. It hurts. And then I can't hear right. I've had ringing in my ears since January. I have reported and reported. I have called military bases, going off track. That's my thing. That's for another day. But this is the impact that it has had on me. Now, and I keep, when I go to the meetings and I ask, has anybody gotten any relief? Because, as I said, real close. And I can see the planes going out. And now, where they used to go straight, there's almost circling my house. And I don't know what's going on. Now the FAA is not talking. We don't have to rehash this again. Very concerned.
Well, we
appreciate very concerned. And I would love if Maryland, if some reps, I would like to have a long talk about what's going on over here, because I almost feel like if somebody would have come to us and said, this is what it's going to be. Make your arrangements. Right now, we just came off recession. I'm cash strapped. I can't go out and buy a $300,000 house. I don't want a mortgage again. I'm old. I don't want to do this again. I had plans for my life. And the really funny thing is, in the end, I had hoped to retire to Brazil. The FAA has a letter of agreement with Brazil now. I can't get away from it. So, anyway, I understand what's going on. I'm glad that we make money and the airport's doing good, but this is a mess, and I know this one did this and this one did that, and I pretty much, the only thing I really want is a night's sleep. I want to be able to get up and function in my life. I don't want to worry about having a heart attack. And I have been told by people at these meetings, not only do they wear earphone type heads, they also put earplugs in. I know people who can't sleep with a CPAP mask. I don't know how they're doing it. Now me, with the helicopters, there's noise, but there's a pressure thing, and that's what's, I can't wear earplugs. There's nothing I can do. I've moved to three different rooms in my house, and I cannot get away from this. So, really stuck here.
We're sorry you're going through this.
Any help we can get.
We appreciate you coming.
I really hope that you postpone this until we get the other message straightened out. And I thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much.
Have a good day, everyone. Thank you.
Now we have a couple of folks signed up to speak in support of the item. We have Youssef Ahmad, CEO of the Northern Anne Arundel County Chamber of Commerce. Good morning,
Governor Hogan, Comptroller Francho, Treasurer Cott. My name is Youssef Ahmad. I'm the CEO for the Northern Anne Arundel County Chamber of Commerce. We are a member organization comprised of over 500 businesses, community organizations, and community members, and I am here today representing the Chamber in support of the expedited procurement request for the Concourse A 5-gate project. And I felt it was important to be here today to testify in trying to separate out the two issues. Our businesses use the airport as an avenue and as a vehicle for transportation to expand their business. The airport truly is the economic driver for our region and one that our chamber members rely on a daily basis. It allows our local businesses to move from local companies to nationwide businesses. And as you guys know, the airport is responsible for nearly $600 million state and local combined tax revenue. This procurement request will allow the businesses that rely on the airport every day to continue to use the airport as their main transportation hub, keeping the tax dollars in Maryland as opposed to having to go down to Dulles or Reagan International. This is more about efficiency and getting through the airport and having our businesses catch their flights on time and having our people that use the airport be able to traffic and go throughout the airport and be a little bit more efficient with the planned projects. We humbly ask that you approve this request. On a quick side note, I'm a lifelong resident of the county, and first on the north side of the airport in Linthicum, now on the west side in Hanover, and can personally testify that BWI and MAA has always been involved with the community and positive economic and social impacts.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it. Next, we have Ed Rothstein, Executive Director of the BWI Partnership.
Good morning. Again, Colonel Retired Ed Rothstein. I am the Executive Director of the Partnership. It's a pleasure to be here this morning in support of the airport. And I'd like to give you a couple of thoughts and some ideas about our relationship from the Partnership with the airport. The mission of the BWI Business Partnership is to facilitate quality relationships among leaders from businesses, government, and organizations who want to make a difference by accelerating positive growth within the region. The airport plays a critical role in doing just that. It is designed through the partnership of the airport, with the partnership, and of course the critical role the airport plays in promoting strong transportation resources and business infrastructure in Central Maryland. And we can't afford to have hiccups or delays within the business community. To educate employers about alternate transportation opportunities within Central Maryland, and also to advocate for policies, programs, and projects that benefit the region. To promote success of BWI Airport, support the Fort Meade community, and also the entire Central Maryland community. Above and beyond BWI Airport's economic impact within the state and the region, I'm here to share with you the role as a key and critical partner that the airport and the leadership and the team that Ricky has plays within our community. This project will enhance the abilities to continue and serve as a strong partner within the region, state, and community, and specifically, obviously, the business community. On a sidebar, in the character of the BWI Airport and Ricky and his team, there's a couple of projects that we have within the partnership. One is a summer youth initiative program where the BWI Airport has really taken a lead in supporting our youth, our inner city youth, throughout the summer. And the second is a shuttle service that we just took over, and it allows employees within the airport to get to the place of employment without delay. And those are two things that, again, just as a side note, that the team at the airport has done to help us within the region and show success. So, thank you.
Yeah. So, if you'd like to ask a question, what exactly do you predict is going to happen with the FAA and the noise problem? You know, I appreciate the inner city youth.
Absolutely.
Reach out and give me money to do this and that. Okay. When are they going to be revised so that we don't have this situation? Because obviously it's not just moving it from one area to another. It's not adding airlines.
Correct.
It's allowing them to fly low and come in at these, I don't know what the issue is, but obviously, the governor and others want them to make some adjustments. When are they going to do that?
We want to get rid of it altogether. We're 100% in agreement with the citizens. But that doesn't have much to do with what we're talking about today or what he does with the partnership.
Yes, sir. And I appreciate it. My preparation for this morning is to share the partnership with the airport and the need to continue the services that the airport has for our community.
Yeah.
Regarding
let's,
FAA,
let's
I, I'm not prepared.
How do you actually get you and your partnership, get the FAA to pay attention to this so that the airport can get away from this non-compliance, I guess, with the state's noise laws. If I were, I love Southwest. I fly it all the time. I'm like, what do they call that? I get a companion pass. I'm so locked into that. But ask them to go lobby the FAA.
I think the best answer I can share with you is, from a leader, is participate in the roundtables within the airport, participate in community events, and understand the problem better. I'm not prepared at this point to share with you what the FAA can and cannot do.
So. Okay. Thank you.
Yes, Attorney General maybe can answer that question better than you.
Yes, sir.
Well, thank you very much.
Yes, sir.
Look, I want to thank everybody who signed up to testify today. And it's very frustrating to hear some of the stories about the people that are concerned and what they're suffering from with this noise. And I can assure you that we are trying to do everything humanly possible to deal with the FAA, who is not a very responsive organization. But we have a whole team of people focused on it and working with the community. we're making great progress that Dulles and Reagan, which is causing the same noise problems in Montgomery County. This one is more difficult given the agreement that the state signed, but we already have filed suit. We are doing everything we can, and we will continue to make every possible effort to revert these flight patterns back to what they used to be before. But the purpose of the project that we're talking about before this board today, this isn't being pushed by the FAA. The FAA couldn't care less about what we're doing with the baggage terminal or where we're moving the gates. It has nothing to do with the flight patterns. The purpose of this is primarily customer service and to upgrade a really outdated baggage handling system that is hampering efficiency and causing all kinds of problems for Southwest and for the customer experience of people that are traveling. We're the number one airport in the Washington metropolitan area. We get rave reviews from the people that are flying in and out of there, except for some of these particular concerns that this thing would take care of. And so to accomplish the upgrade of this system, this baggage handling system, we have to shut down five gates and switch to five other gates. That doesn't change any flight patterns. It doesn't add any planes. It does nothing. Now, sometime over the next 5 years, the old gates that are being shut down could be renovated and opened, which could result in more flights. Hopefully the FAA thing will be resolved by that. But if not, I think we would have an opportunity to come back and address it. So I would say I'm amenable to thinking about, I mean, these are not mutually exclusive goals. Let's upgrade the service of the airport and let's continue to fight the FAA. I think if we can address the baggage claim system, which is a top priority for us, for Southwest, which is our largest client out there, once it's completed, I'd be amenable to doing a reevaluation of the noise issues before the other five gates are ever put back into service. And hopefully at that time we'll have made some progress with the FAA. And if not, and if it looks like it's going to add to the noise, then we'll have to have a tough discussion then about whether or not we should open new gates or whether or not we should not. But I think that we should ascertain any effect that those, if we go with the additional five gates, what that would have. Hopefully it won't be an issue by then. But, to hold up this project would be a disaster, in my opinion. And I don't think it has any impact whatsoever on the noise or the FAA problem. I don't know if anybody has any questions.
Yeah, no, I happen to disagree. I think that the way to get FAA's attention is to get Southwest involved in this. And that would change
things. I
don't
think the FAA cares less about what we think or what Southwest thinks, I can tell you.
Well, then that's...
After 4 years of talking with them about it, I can tell you that's
not
very responsive.
Just giving my personal viewpoint that I don't think anything's going to happen on the noise levels based on the current strategy. Now maybe the governor is right, and so FAA will change their mind in 2, 3, 4, 5 years, but it doesn't sound to me like they're going to. If there's any reason for them to, they're not even participating in the roundtable anymore. So I'm going to vote no, even though I love Southwest. I'd put a sign up.
Hope they'll still be around next time you try to fly.
Yeah, I'd put a...
have a baggage handling system.
And I'd put a sign up in the baggage system. If you have a problem with your delayed baggage, write the FAA. Because they're the ones that have inflicted this noise pollution on our state. It's unfair. It shouldn't be there. It's correctable. I don't know what Jim Smith or whoever it was the transportation secretary, signed. How long is that in effect?
It's forever.
Well, let's cancel it.
That's what we've been trying to do for 4 years.
At this point, I don't think this is appreciate the efforts. I just don't see it as a strategy that has any hope of success. I'm going to vote no.
Again, this is not a strategy to convince FAA. This is fixing an antiquated, failing baggage system. And, whether that helps convince anybody, no, I don't think it will. It just gives us, this has no relation whatsoever to the flight pattern.
Mm-hmm. Well, that's why we have that.
I'm going to make a motion to approve.
Different views.
Oh, well, Mr. Smith, you have anything you want?
Welcome, Ricky. The only thing I'll add is a couple clarifications. The FAA, not the state of Maryland, has control over activities in the sky. The FAA also does regulate mitigation efforts to noise. The state of Maryland is in compliance with noise requirements.
We have an approved, what's called a Part 150 study that includes all kinds of mitigation efforts, soundproofing homes, putting noise monitors in certain areas where we can monitor the impact of noise, and a host of other things. Airlines have has transitioned to what's called Stage 3 and Stage 4 aircraft, which are much quieter. The new aircraft, for example, the Southwest Airlines is operating out of BWI Marshall Airport, are Stage 3 and Stage 4 aircraft. They're the quietest aircraft that you can find. And so, over the years, the state of Maryland has spent millions of dollars mitigating noise.
Okay, let me just interrupt for a minute. What do you say to the county executive of Howard County, the chairperson of Howard County Council, who sent a letter to all of us saying, in conclusion, because of all this issue, Howard County asked that the board allow time for consideration of the complex issues involved and defer action until the FAA has responded to the administrative petitions filed by the state and Howard County, or at least until FAA takes concrete action to come into compliance with state noise abatement laws?
I would
what do you say to that?
I would say the two issues are not connected.
And how long would it take? How long is it going to take to respond to the administrative petitions? Is that something General Frosch has to tell us? How long are you expecting?
So the effort with the FAA that the state has taken is now in the FAA's hand. I don't know that anybody except for a representative of the FAA can honestly tell you how long they're going to take. As the governor stated, they've been unresponsive, and we've been very aggressive. However, the FAA's mishandling of this situation should not tie the hands of the state of Maryland trying to meet the needs of customers using the airport at standards that they would experience at any world-class airport in the country. Customers waiting for 3 hours for bags should not be subjected to that because the FAA decides to be missing in action. And all we're asking for is that the board allows us to take steps to improve the airport in a way that our customers are asking, that our airline is asking, that does not add additional operations, that does not support additional noise. It's a renovation to the terminal that probably should have been done years ago, but we're now up against the wall, and we have to do it, or we're going to begin to compromise service.
And what would be the bad things that would happen if we respond to the county executive and the chair of the council and simply defer it for a couple of weeks or for 4 weeks until we see whether you're correct that the FAA could give a hoot, whether it would impact their
Yeah, I don't know if you listened
to
what I said a minute ago, but I didn't put a motion on the floor, but I said we would agree to not add those five gates until we came back before here to see, to reevaluate the noise. Right now we're not talking about adding any gates.
Correct.
We're talking about adding a better baggage terminal.
Yeah, but that's not
There's not a single flight that's going to change.
Yeah, but that's not
that's
the
nothing
problem.
To do with
the
FAA. That they couldn't care less.
The problem is not adding new capacity. The problem is the flights, the height, the altitude of the planes as they're coming in. I understand it's driven by the airlines because they want to save money and they want to do this. So they're coming in where you can literally read Goodyear on the tires as it goes over your house. So for us to sit here and say, well, you know, they're not really responsive. Well, let Southwest go in and knock on their door.
Sir, I will appeal to you. Southwest has been knocking on the door.
And on whose door?
On the FAA's door.
Oh,
and,
really?
I would appeal to you, sir, again, putting our customers in a substandard airport terminal is not going to phase the FAA. This is not the FAA's issue.
You're like punishing the wrong people.
Yes.
Right. This is a customer service initiative.
Yeah. Can I get Mr. Richardson to come up and see here, Southwest Airlines? Where is he? Come on up.
Hello, thank you. Thank you for the time. I wasn't planning to speak, and I want to...
Could you introduce yourself to the record, please?
Yes, I will. My name is David Richardson. I work for Southwest Airlines.
Thank you.
And a lifelong resident of the state of Maryland. So I echo the governor's words, as well as Ricky Smith. Oh, Ricky, very eloquent right here. So Southwest has been working with the FAA, trying to work with the FAA. I'll make you a couple points. First, we did not support this Metroplex redesign. So the lawsuits, everything, Southwest did not support it. And I'll be happy to send you a Baltimore Sun article that explains our position.
Yeah.
On that
but
regard.
But it's your planes that are coming in low.
Yes, but the FAA manages the airspace. So a pilot can ask permission, but ultimately the FAA is in control of the airspace. Right. We have the most advanced fleet in the industry. So all our planes are stage 4 and stage 5. So they're very quiet. It's a technical term. We ordered over 200 new Boeing 730 MAXs, which are 40% quieter. Our desire is to fly high and descend on idle. And all these planes are GPS-based, so also on departure, we are capable of fanning out. So most of the concerns, maybe not 100%, but we believe most of the concerns can be addressed. And we're trying to work with the FAA, but I'll be honest with you, in my personal opinion, I don't think the lawsuit helps in that regard. I think it freezes things up. So there's issues all around the country. It's particularly acute in the greater D.C. area, I must say, but not alone.
So if we put this off for a month or a few months, would that incentivize you or depress you as far as your activity in getting the FAA to respond to your legitimate requests? And it sounds like there's a technical fix. Obviously, coming in higher and coming in idle makes a lot of sense. But if they're going to just be stubborn and say no, why can't we take something like delaying this and then urging you to redouble your efforts?
Well, first, I agree with the governor's comments. But moreover, with all due respect, you would be punishing our customers. You would not be punishing the FAA. So we have millions of customers. And the one feedback I hear, not just from our customers, but from elected officials, is why don't you fly here? Why don't you fly there? Occasionally, actually, the one biggest complaint I hear is our baggage system. It was designed pre-9/11. 9/11 came. We finished the project. But the capacity of the footprint of the baggage handling system has never been great. It's always been a problem. So we definitely not only support, but want to expedite this baggage handling system in the best interest of our customers, your consumers.
I don't know. I think it's a pretty fair request from County Executive Kittleman and Councilperson Siggity, but I guess I'm in the minority here.
Okay. Well, thank you. Let me speak.
Thank you. Any other questions on the you want to pull this out so you can vote against it, Adam?
Mm-hmm. You want to make Governor, you mentioned I'm really torn on this. I get it because I actually live in a flight path myself. Dulles. But on the other hand, the situation at the airport, I think, really is not sustainable. I fly in and out of PWI, and I try to not check luggage because it's so difficult. You mentioned not going on to expand, but to do this part of it. But that's not part of the motion that's before us. Mm-hmm. Could the motion that's before us be made contingent or conditioned by the understanding that there will not be an opening, an expansion of net, what I call net expansion of gates?
Without coming back before
without
us?
Without coming back to the Board of Public Works.
So if I understand correctly, the where we experience a surplus in gates will be the gates that Southwest Airlines will vacate on C. Right. And if I'm hearing correctly,
no
we won't move
increase,
on those. Pardon me?
No net increase in open. I don't know how to say it.
So it's what I suggested. If she wants to put it to a motion, which I'm okay with, to say we can move forward with the upgraded baggage claim. You can shut down the five gates. You can transfer the five new gates. But before we come back, which won't be for a while, to say, hey, we want to go back and renovate those old five gates and open them, that you'd have to come back before the Board of Public Works.
These are the gates on Concourse C.
C, yes.
So there's not an increase.
Yeah, I would second that motion. Three? Nothing.
She
on
still
that
looks
motion.
Puzzled. I'm trying to understand.
No, I'm puzzled if you're puzzled. I mean,
it's pretty clear. Same thing I said.
Yeah.
Only this is
the address is the
we
concern.
We may not be here.
There's no more traffic.
Here.
There's no more gates, and we can get our baggage.
And meanwhile, all of us work together to push the FAA to A, speak to us, and B,
when we have a lawsuit now, it's just been filed as of a couple of days ago.
Yeah. It seems to me the concern is that surplus gates will allow us to bring in more service and more operations.
Yes.
Right? That happens whenever Southwest Airlines vacates the gates on C. And so I think the governor's motion is that before we take any steps to occupy or add service to those gates on C,
yes.
that we come back to.
Yes. Got the motion?
That's a motion to amend, and the motion to amend.
Been seconded, and it's been voted on 3-0.
So the motion is amended now, 19X.
So then we can move forward with the rest of the agenda?
No. So the motion was amended, but now I need a vote on the amended motion, right?
Okay.
Or motion for 19.
All those in favor of the amended motion that's already been seconded and agreed to.
Is it 3-0 also?
Yes.
No.
Well, then we'll withdraw it. I mean, we're only doing this to accommodate you, so if you don't want to do that, if you don't want us to pull it out, then we're going to move forward.
No, I don't want to pull it out.
No, we're
not. I thought you were asking for a vote.
Okay.
If you don't want to make that motion.
So currently, I believe that item 19 has been amended to add language, 3-0, just to add the language to the motion that there would be no opening of the surplus gates in C without coming back to the Board of Public Works. So that amended motion needs to be voted on.
Do I have to have both to pull it out?
No. So now the amended motion needs to be voted on by the board, and you could also take the amendment out if you want. But, yes, so that amended motion.
No, I didn't understand the treasurer was doing that for my benefit. It doesn't really answer my question about the county executive.
She was doing it for her. I think she
wanted it. The comptroller has a motion to withdraw the item from the agenda.
No, I have.
Is there a second?
I have a request to bring the item out and then have a vote on it.
Right.
And that, I think, is the proper
procedure. What we're doing right now. Right?
Thank you.
Okay.
So now the vote is on the motion as amended.
As amended.
Right.
And I would like to indicate I'm voting no.
No,
I would simply like to have it deferred based on what the county executive and the council president sent. I think that's entirely appropriate, and I think it would have a positive impact on the getting the attention of the FAA on a separate but related matter. So I would.
Can I just say, if I thought it would do that, I would agree with the comptroller. But I've worked with the FAA for quite a while, a number of issues, and I don't think they care.
Right.
I will not vote for the motion either. So there dies for lack of a second. However, I will second the motion by the treasurer.
I thought it was 2-1. I think she's voted
for
it with you, and I voted against it.
I still have it.
I think you had a motion to postpone it for 2 weeks, and we're all saying no.
No, I just... My statement was I'm voting no because I think it should be deferred, but I'm voting no, period.
Okay. So the motion carries 2-1.
Thank you.
Now, are there any other questions on the remainder of the Department of Transportation agenda? We don't have time for any more. Sorry. Any of I'm talking about questions from these two. You know, somebody will have to explain it to you. But that concludes today's
Thank you. I have one question.
You can check the board's website this afternoon. Everything will be up on the board's website with each agenda.
Yeah. MDOT item 4, the paving over of 7 acres.
Yes, we have Director Steve Johnson.
Is there anything that can be done besides putting up an impervious surface on 7 acres that have been opened?
Actually, because of the use of that service, we're not able to use impervious surface at that terminal, given that it's...
You're not using an impervious surface?
Try.
Right. We can't... MDE regulations prevent us from using a surface that would allow leakage through it. So,
impervious.
Yes,
it
pervious.
Will be impervious.
Correct.
Great. I don't support that.
Yeah.
I find that difficult to believe that there isn't something that can be done to alleviate that issue.
Yeah, we'll have all the required stormwater systems that will capture the runoff from that terminal.
Okay.
There's a motion to approve the remainder of the transportation agenda.
Except I'm not voting on that one.
Voting no.
We'll talk to you some more.
She wants to remove pull that item out.
Right. Yeah. But I didn't know she wanted to vote. No, she's abstaining.
I'm abstaining.
So 2-0 on number 4C and the rest of the agenda.
We will.
3-0.
Thank you.
Gosh, there's 3-0 on the remainder of the agenda.
Thank you very much.
2-0. Yeah, okay.